Welcome back, footy fans, to another episode of Donnie's Disposals. I'm your host, Coach Donnie Hess here, back with another AFL round review. Ladies and gentlemen, another round of footy is through. Why does this season go so darn quickly? We are through 9 rounds, so let's get to it. Joining me today, a new face to the podcast, but not a new show, as one of the many members of the Crowjack podcast decides to join me, as I have Peter from the Crowjack podcast joining me. Peter, great to see you, sir.
Thank you, Donnie, and thank you to your amazing listeners and everyone else too. And thank you for having me on. I've been looking forward to it. So,
Well, I have to say this, even though last year's drama between Sydney and Adelaide, I have to say this though. You guys were so nice to me because I know Jade during that episode even said something like I had messaged her and been like it was one of those. As much as I loved that Sydney won the game, and again, it was nothing personal, I couldn't celebrate that win at all. And my favorite thing about it is there was so much class from the entire podcast. And I know you guys were so nice to me. I know there were some kind words said on the podcast, and I've reacted to a couple of your pod to a couple of your social media stuff, and like I said, I've enjoyed the podcast. I'm not a Crows fan, but I absolutely love your podcast. It's fantastic work. I know it's Crows Central, and that's perfectly fine, and I love hearing about it. And it's been tough listening a little bit because I've wanted your guys to be this your team to be successful this year, and it's not exactly gone the way you've wanted it to this year.
It's look. So just to give a bit of background to everyone listening, I set up the Crowject back in 2018, end of 2018, and so it's been going for close to 6 years now. Like you said, we've got a. It's definitely not just me. In fact, I've taken a bit of a step back from the pod for the next couple of months, but we've got a huge plethora of co-hosts as well, and we all consider ourselves co-hosts too. Like you said, Jade and Elodie, Cream, Leighton, Ben, Lockie, Ray, Sophie, and I'm sure I'm missing someone because I'm an idiot, but at the same time, like we all contribute and do a lot. We do a lot in the background too, sort of for the fabric of the club, which ironically is a book that we made as well, which is every single Guernsey that the club has ever worn or displayed, or AFL and AFL women's too. We also the Go Crom stuff as well, which is now worldwide too. We've donated about $32,000 to charity so far. Actually donated as well, and but honestly, I love everything that we do. It has been a real slog as well. Like we had to bloody copyright this logo as well, just to stop people sniffing around and using it. Little things like that, Donnie, that you never think to yourself when you set up a pod that yes, in 3 4 years' time, that's what I'll be doing. But look, it's something I love. I appreciate the very kind words. I didn't want to bring up that bloody game last year, but I can tell you that was one of the most surreal experiences of my life from start to finish of the game. You know what? Story time. So I was on the member engagement panel for the Adelaide Crows last year, and we were invited at the end of the year to a chairman's dinner for that game. So I invited Leighton along, one of the co-hosts, and Leighton is a he's an aficionado of all things VHS. So he had, from Graham Corns, our inaugural coach and AFL Hall of Famer, he gave us all of his game tapes, broadcast quality tapes, like Betamax stuff and everything that we recorded and have archived, that sort of thing. So Leighton is a huge fan of all things Crows as well, and he bleeds Betamax if he could. However, when it comes to that game, chairman's dinner. I'm used to wearing track pants. Look at me. I wear three stripe normally, and I had to go and wear smart casual for a game. I wasn't used to that, and then trying to be polite in the hoity-toity section. Within three quarter time, we're down by 35 odd points, and I said to Leighton, and I think it was probably the five beers I had snuck at half time. I was just like, "We're on. We are going to come back." Like it's going to happen. And I remember counting with my fingers each goal that was happening. When the Ben Keys one got up, me and Leighton embraced, we hugged. It was a release. And then hearing the language around us from the hoity-toity Western Stand crowd was quite visceral. And after the game, so we do the walk and talk. So if you go to our YouTube page as well, I can say that Walk and Talk was one of the most, it was like, I can't use the comparison of like being in a war zone or something like that, but it was like people were like shell shocked. I mean, there's no other way to describe it. They were like, did that just happen? Like, and of course, on social media, it was coming out that it was a goal, and more people were getting more and more mad the longer we did the walk and talk. And I remember coming home and saying to my beautiful wife, because I came home and just gone to, and she just turned to me as I got into bed after having a shower. It's like midnight. I'm just a bit dirty, and she just wants me. She's like, "How did they miss that goal?" And I was just like, don't, just please don't. No, it's just one of those things. And look, I don't hold it against the Swans whatsoever. You know, you're not responsible. And to be honest, I just want to say as well, I don't hold against that goal umpire either. I think people that do and have made personal threats towards them are absolute fucking idiots. Sorry for swearing, but
You're
like if
fine.
you do that, it, you know, human error happens. I work in a job, you work in a job, it happens. It's more what happened with the AFL and the follow-up from there. I'm not saying that we should got points back or anything, nothing like that. It's just more what happened in the off season to try to rectify it was a bit of a farce. But I get off my soapbox, Donnie, because it is your pod.
Stay
But
on your soapbox. It's perfectly fine. And drop the four letter words all you want. There's not an issue there. I said it. I understood
wine
the
is a four
vitriol.
letter word. Cheers. Sorry. Yeah.
I understood the vitriol, and it was one of the reasons why. And I had a few Swans fans who were antagonists in that, and I kind of reached out to a couple of them. Like, I'm like, trust me, if it was the other way around, you'd be doing the exact same thing that the Crows fans are doing. And a couple of them reached back and they're like, yeah, you're right, I probably shouldn't. And I'm like, yeah, I said, you can't do that, because I said it's a very emotional situation. And I like I said, I agree with you. I think how the AFL handled it was absolutely atrocious. And I think when they stood him down, I said, you didn't do anything positive to the whole situation. In fact, you
Exactly.
actually probably made it worse. And I think,
Absolutely.
as we've seen this year, I know somebody said it was a directive. Bullshit. Bullshit. It's not a, it was a directive to save your own ass after that happened. Because what that goal judge did was actually what everybody's complaining that they should do, and let's just make a decision and be confident about it. He did. He was
Yeah, and that
confident about it. He made the decision. I understand it was wrong, but he did exactly what you were saying. And then he gets lambasted, he gets stood down, and now we wonder why for several rounds there for a bit, it seemed like everything that was like this close was being reviewed. And then hearing the media whinge and whine and suck about it. And I'm just like, this is what happens when something like last year's game that happened. That's why you're complaining, is
It's a
because
pendulum swing. It's a pendulum
exactly.
swing.
It's the result. It's the, for every action, there's an equally opposite reaction. It's the
Exactly.
scientific thing in footy. It's just the way
I
it
mean,
is.
don't forget with the tribunal. I can't remember who it was leading into the prelim final or the elimination final. There was some who was it? Someone hit Maynard or Maynard hit someone. I can't remember exactly off the top of my head who it was.
Maynard hit Brayshaw. Trust me, that
That's it.
I went off on that. I literally went off on that because
Well, don't forget the AFL went off on it too, because in the off season they then said precedence doesn't matter. Which, in a legal sense, is one of the most stupidest things I've ever heard of. That's like turning around and saying, you know what? Someone's done a bunch of small crimes, then they've murdered someone. All that stuff in the background doesn't matter, you know, to sort of lead to, you know, a criminal past and, you know, sort of a guilty act and guilty mind, that sort of thing. I can't think of the Latin off the top of my head, but at the same time, you know, all the precedence just doesn't fucking matter. Which is the most AFL thing ever. Like since I've been following the game for since I was a wee baby, and all I can think of is everyone talks about the tribunal and how fucked it is. And guess what? The AFL just said, you know what? We just need more variation. So I don't know, man. Can't fix it. But
Well,
hey,
let's
we've got another round of footy coming. So.
now that we've had our that we had our fun, and I absolutely love it. And again, I love these conversations because it's great to get somebody that doesn't just go react to everything emotionally. And again, like I said, I have no issue with people being emotional at the first sense. but it's after you kind of take a break. I really wish people would think about it a little bit deeper than the small puddle on the sidewalk after a rainstorm. I mean, it's plain and simply, there has to be more depth thought on this. Again, is it perfect? Absolutely not. So let's get into the normal part of our show now that we've had some fun soapbox moments. I absolutely, like I said, didn't bring it to bring up any trauma. I'm sorry. Send me
Oh,
the bill
bro.
if you need to go to your
Vietnam
therapist. I'm
level
sorry.
flashbacks are happening right now. Anyway.
Let's jump into round nine, an interesting round of footy. I have to say, some absolute crackers and then some absolute stinkers. So let's go through it through just really quickly before we go game by game, your thoughts of this entire round of round nine of footy, because again, close, some really fantastic games and some absolute duds.
Look, on the pod, we Ray likes to call them poo slingers, and the games where it's just either absolutely lopsided or a low scoring just mess, they're the poo slingers, and we had quite a few of them. All I can say is to just cap it off with the game my team, the Adelaide Crows, to have a draw at 90 apiece, and one of the closest, in the AFL's history, one of the closest games ever. For that to happen on a Sunday bloody afternoon with
On Mother's
Dwayne
Day, too.
Russell and Kelly Underwood commentating, like, my God, like, you just can't make it up. You can't. It's just, it was a, it's, so there was just, look, if you needed fertilizer, it's a great round. That's all I'll say.
I thought there were some absolute classics. I know I know that there was a couple of them that were absolutely fantastic. And then, like I said, just a couple of games that, I mean, I was hoping that they wouldn't get that bad that did. And I think that's the frustrating part is you look at the slate at the end of Saturday night in Australia and Sunday and the first game of Sunday, and you're kind of going, what the heck is this competition turned into? But we'll break down each one of those here really quickly. Let's start off with an absolute cracker on Thursday night as Carlton survive Melbourne 77-76. But if you tuned into this game at halftime, the score line, Carlton was absolutely obliterating Melbourne in this game. Like I was sitting there watching the re I was sitting there watching the replay. Going, I almost started fast forwarding it because if it gets to about 30, 35 points, I get to the point I start fast forwarding because I'm like, I'm not going to watch a team get absolutely destroyed. But just quick story here is that I play fantasy footy with 11 other Americans who are all footy nuts. So I was checking my fantasy team because I wanted to see how my team was going and got the spoiler, which I'm always angry at myself when I get the spoiler, and saw the final score that Carlton wins by one. So I'm intrigued. I'm like, how the hell does Carlton only win by one? So I stay tuned, stop my fast forwarding, and to watch Melbourne absolutely take Carlton to the cleaners in the fourth quarter to the point where Carlton better thank the Lord they got 4 points out of this because if there would have been at least two more minutes, I think Melbourne wins this game of football. But I'm not sure if this is more of an indictment on Carlton's ability not to hold the lead or Melbourne's ability to absolutely be atrociously bad starters.
Bit of both, mate. First off, credit to yourself for the correct pronunciation of Melbourne. I have a US wife. She's originally from a couple of states south of you, and she had to pick up on it very quickly. So shout out to yourself for having a Australian rules podcast and being able to say Melbourne properly. But the other thing as well is, look, that game, just seeing Carlton just come straight out of the gates with 5 goals to nothing in the first quarter, I think I've used the term again, but I'm going to say shell-shocked a little bit for Melbourne, but I can't really say why. But there's a game that we're going to talk about later as well that a similar thing happened where momentum swung with in a visceral way. Honestly, I think Melbourne came home with a wet sail, and I think Carlton had spent all of their tickets, and that's a sign of bad coaching. I think Melbourne definitely had the upper hand from a coaching perspective, and I know people are going to be like, hey, Carlton kicked 5 goals to nothing in the first quarter. But I actually do think if you can't make enough adjustments to, like, if I look after half time, you've got 3 goals, 3 that Carlton kicked versus What's that? 8-9 to Melbourne. That's not a good thing. You know what I mean? Like, that's definitely a sign of some adjustments happened to Melbourne, and Carlton didn't adjust to them. Why would that not happen? And look, we can talk about the tackle as well, which, you know, I don't know what to think anyway. Let's be clear here, Donnie. We both love college sports, okay? You're a Hawkeyes fan. I'm a Razorbacks fan as well. I don't have my U of A top on me at the moment. However, the one thing we can say is that all umpires in NFL, college sports, that sort of thing, they're not exactly the fittest operators, okay? Mm-hmm. I'm not fit either. But when I look at AFL umpires, they're elite athletes. They're marathon runners. They do a spectacular job. And they've got to make a multitude of decisions and non-decisions as well during a game. Like, as in, you know, that is not something that requires a penalty or anything else like that during a game. You try bloody doing that. So the fact that people are harping on about this one umpiring decision with the tackle, non-tackle, to be perfectly honest, I feel like our game has become just too complicated to officiate. Mm-hmm. That's something that I get frustrated about when people focus on that one thing. I think I look at this and I just think it was a poorly coached game by Carlton. It was their game to lose and they almost did it. And somehow, look, Melbourne came through 11 goals, 10. If that was 12-9, they would have won.
Mm-hmm. Yep. No, 100% with you. And what's frustrating is that what's helping that narrative is when announcers, and again, people that listen to my podcast know BT, I loathe BT commenting. I loathe him commenting because
I can't stand him on Channel 7. He's horrible on Channel 7. On Triple M, he's brilliant.
On Triple M, I don't mind him because he's a storyteller. But here's the thing. On Channel 7, I've said this numerous times. He gives opinions when I don't care. You're the commenter. You're not special comments. Do your job and shut up. Like I'm going to be very, very honest with you. When he gives in his opinion, what I find funny is that I've almost started writing it down. 95% of the time, he's wrong. He's wrong. And the part is nobody will challenge him on it on Channel 7.
Except Luke Hodge. Challenge him. Luke Hodge gets into him,
and I love that because it really ruffles bristle, and I absolutely love it because what's really fascinating about it is that most of the time Hodge gets him, and you can hear BT kind of you can tell he's not happy about it, but it's like he went on and on about how the Carlton player ducked his head to get the tackle. No, he didn't. If you actually watch it, he's trying to escape the tackle using leverage. And as he's doing it, he falls forward. He's not trying to hit his head. I don't know any player that's trying to get hurt like that. Nobody's trying to. Does it happen? Probably. Is there an intent as much as he wants it there to be? Absolutely not. I can't see it. I don't see what he's seeing. I think he's seeing something in a different light. I think he's trying to, everybody's rotting the system. No, they're not. Not everybody is. There's absolute rat bags that are going to do it. They're going to rot the system. It's going to happen, but not everybody does. And I'm tired of this narrative because he says it. So then mindless fools online start saying it. So it becomes a bigger issue than what I really think it is. So it's just, this is one of those. Carlton wins the game. They get the 4 points. They're going to be happy. But if I'm a Carlton fan, I'm a little leery because this can't happen over and over. I'd be
very,
again.
Very,
I'd be a little leery. And knowing that the game that you have this week is one of those that you can't make that mistake, it will be fascinating to see it. We can discuss that a little bit later. We jump down to GMHBA Stadium down in Geelong, where the shocker of the round as the team that shall not be named for some Crows fans. I'll say it here just because I try to be Switzerland when I do these podcasts, as Port Adelaide knock off the Geelong Cats 101-95 and would basically, I would call a carbon copy of the Carlton Melbourne game because Port Adelaide jumps out to an absolutely massive lead early and the Cats chip away, chip away, chip away, and the Cats survive. and the Pardal Power survive down in the Cattery, which is something not too many teams can say they do, is to go down to GMHBA and walk away with 4 points.
Yeah, now look, I have a lot of thoughts about Port Adelaide. I hate their guts. And that's why we created the Garden Stakes Guernsey, which you can see here as well, which you can get on project.bigcartel.com, which is a homage to Port Adelaide's heritage by making them very angry as well. Now, the last time that Port Adelaide won at the time, it was called Gardenia Park, was 2007. They won. Dominic Cassisi had a game of his life. I actually remember watching that game as well. Cassisi slotted a goal and they won by 1 point. And in the rematch about 5 weeks later, different bloody story, all I can say about that. But they hadn't won there since 2007. Now, off the top of my head, I know that the Crows haven't won there since 2002. And that is because that stadium itself is an absolute pain in the butt to get to and to play at as well, a very narrow stadium, a very narrow ground as well. However, rinse and repeat, really, for what I discussed about the last game. All I can say is Ken Hinckley is a coach that is one of the Crows' best coaches because somehow he always manages to stuff it up all the time. And look, there was some rhetoric about him putting his hand up to the crowd and saying, "Can you hear that?" which is complete fallacy. He was clearly someone was talking to him on the bench and he happened to put his hand up. He wasn't looking at the camera and you could see he was actually talking to someone. You know what I mean? But the fact that it's, 12-5 to 5-6 at the Cattery is just unheard of. I don't know. I had a lot of thoughts about the fact that Jeremy Cameron stayed on in the fourth quarter. I'm surprised there hasn't been more talk. I actually haven't looked at the news much today,
He
but
has went into percussion and concussion protocol, so he's out at least for this
well,
game.
so the rules on the HIA, and I say this only because of last year with the Alirili situation at the showdown last year, which I was actually was very close to me when I saw that and heard the crasher heads. As a nurse practitioner myself, I was actually like, "Oh my God, like support that man's airway," because you could tell he was out of it completely. There are clear protocols about even alleged head strikes that you need to come off for a minimum of 15 minutes. And it's like when you're off the ground, 1-5 starts from there. The fact that he didn't come off, I cannot believe that there hasn't been more that's rained down on Geelong, especially for the fact that one of their players is the head of the AFL Players Association. Like, don't tell me that you give a crap about AFL, CTE and everything else like that when you're not going to come down on this. Just, I beggars believe as to why this hasn't happened. So I think that's the overarching thing from this game, more so than the result itself, to be honest. The result, Geelong have lost by a goal. Chris Scott is not the greatest of coaches. He has a great supporting staff as well. I feel like I'm poo-pooing on all the coaches, but literally all the coaches that we've talked about in the first two games, other than Simon Goodwin, are just the ones that I just hate the most. But honestly, Ken Hinckley as well, the fact that you can almost choke away that game. Horne Francis had a great game too. So,
Yep, his ability to go forward and be that almost striker like goal forward is something. It's difficult. I mean, you don't there's not too many of them. Petrarca's shown that he's pretty good at it. I know Patrick Cripps has found himself doing that a little bit this year. So those are unique situations, because if you get a midfielder defending him, that can be an absolute nightmare for teams. And some teams, when that happens, it messes up their structure to try to pass off. So it's fascinating to see how it goes. Again, that's a huge win for Port Adelaide. I agree with you. I think Coach Scott sometimes gets a lot of plaudits that sometimes I think he runs his mouth. I think Coach Scott runs his mouth a little bit too much. I think he talks about things that honestly, when I look at him, I go, dude, what the hell are you talking about? Like, he says, I'm not going to talk about it, and then proceeds to spend the next 5 minutes talking about it. Since like, you can coach, dude. You're not a philosopher. You're not freaking Freud here. It's like, dude, shut up. I don't know. Cameron's out this next week, so we'll have to see what's the total damage of this, not just the 4 points lost against Port Adelaide, but how it moves on throughout the year. I agree with you. I think it's a really bad look for the Cats organization that Cameron was not pulled. I understand that you're dealing with a competitor, but there's, I mean, what's the doctor to do? Grab him by the ear like a little kid and drag him off? I mean, it's one of those where
pull him off,
yeah,
get the
exactly.
security out, and just drag him off with a bloody, you know, the exit stage left sort of thing, the big hook, you know, that
like,
sort of thing.
Or is there a way for the medicos to like put a sign to the umpire so the umpire can stop the game? And I know, stopping the game. What are you talking about, coach? This is one of those, a
We
health
do it for the blood
situation.
rule.
I don't
We do it
exactly.
for
We
the
do
blood
it for
rule.
a blood rule. Just let him. Hey, we're taking him off. We're taking him off for concussion. We're getting him out of it. We're getting him out of the high traffic area where something worse could happen. I'm completely okay with that. So it's just, it's very, very frustrating to see that happen again. So I don't want to dive onto this too much, but again, I'm 100% with you. Like I said, I'm not even a nurse practitioner. And I was like, they got to get him off. They got to get him off. And when he didn't go off, I was just like, this is a horrible, horrible look for it. And then the commentators droning on about it. And I'm like, what are you going to do? Like, legitimately, what are you going to do? Which
I
really
mean,
frustrating.
for me, I was thinking more the, you know, is it negligence to keep him on? If something was to happen to him, if, say, he was to be hit from the side again, just, you know, an innocuous tap, you know what I mean? Or gets falconed by the ball or something else like that. Who takes on the indemnity then? And I think the AFL really need to think about that in depth. It's just something that personally I see and I think to myself, you're taking on the risk by making an assessment that that's okay, they're okay to stay out. No, you can't hand on heart say that. So that's where the question has to be about who's responsible then. So,
and you have to defend the player from themselves at times, which is hard to do.
Exactly.
And I think that's the hard thing to do is that so many athletes are told, be tough, stay in there. And it's like, it's the exact opposite. It's the exact opposite in this situation, which is really frustrating. So we'll move on to the other game on Friday night. Sees the Sydney Swans go out west to Optus Stadium and get a win over Fremantle, 87-39. There's a little bit of communication and talk about this game a little bit. I'm going to discuss this a little bit later in the burning questions because I don't like talking about something like this as part of the game because whether or not it changed the outcome of the game, I can't say because I'm not in the Frio rooms. So I don't want to address that just now. We'll talk a little bit about the situation a little bit later. It's a tragedy. Okay. It really is a tragedy. And I 100% understand those that did say what they thought should have happened. We'll discuss that a little bit later. Swan's just too good. Fremantle, I mean, they're ruining themselves. I mean, they could not kick straight in this game. Was it because of the situation that happened? I'm not sure. And I'm not going to comment on that. I would also say that I think Sydney's pressure was one of the other reasons why they were a little bit wayward kicking. But this just showed Sydney is one of the best teams in the competition right now because their kicking is going really well. You don't know who to guard going forward. I mean, whether it's Armadi, whether it's Logan, whether it's McLean, whether it's Wicks, whether it's Haywood right now. And then Heaney, Warner, Goulden, who do you stop? Because as soon as you stop one, some of the others pop up like whack-a-mole.
Look, I didn't watch the game, unfortunately, mate. I was watching the Geelong-Port Adelaide one. But I think the burning questions, which we will get to, I think I'll reserve my judgment for then. The only reason being is just to speak from personal experience as a Crows fan as well, going back to 2015 with Phil Walsh, etc. Just to sort of, you know, give some credence to the experience that the players may have been going through, that sort of thing. So.
Yeah, no, completely understand that. And like I said, it's I heard this brought up and again, we'll talk about that in just a little bit. So we jump to the Saturday afternoon games where we see a little bit of a shocker as the Hawks, after a few ugly weeks there for a bit, get bounce back at Utah's stadium down in Launceston and get a win 58-53. And again, old Rossi Lyon with some random, I mean, I'm still trying to figure out what the hell he's talking about, but I got to give my hat tip to the Hawks because Sammy Mitchell's figured it out. He's got another 4 points in the bag, and the Hawks have went from being a team that people were going, ooh, did they make a mistake, to they're starting to find a way. Now, St. Kilda is still a purgatory team to me. I still don't know what the heck they're doing. at first I thought they were going to be a run and gun team that was going to use their leg speed and do that. And they just, it's like they've abandoned, it's like they've left the proverbial child on the side of the road and just ran away from it as fast as possible, because I don't recognize the footy that I was seeing earlier in the year. And I don't know why, because this was a Hawks team that I thought their run and gun style was going to have just a field day against a Hawks team that still is not 100% healthy.
Look, all I can say is St. Kilda should bloody stay in Tasmania. That's all I'll talk about that. Because seriously, so you listened to the ESPN Arkansas cross that I did last week, and this was the only game that I picked as well, is the one that was a deadlock. And the reason for that is that St. Kilda are massively overhyped. It's not because of Ross Lyon. And I think Ross Lyon, he just coaches, and his game plan is a very negative game plan. It's a very sort of, you know, there is a lot of chess. I think as a tactician, he is brilliant, but I think he should just stick to being a defensive coach. I don't think he's cracked out to be a head coach. Yes, he's made a grand final, but Fremantle during the early 2010s, my God, that was hell to watch. And even with St. Kilda as well, with all the weapons that they had in the late 2000s too, that's a lost dynasty, honestly. And to be honest, coming back to St. Kilda, it's not helping anything. I knew that this was going to happen purely because Hawthorn play well in Tasmania. That's it. And St. Kilda don't. I haven't really looked at the stats on that one, but whatever. And at the same time, it's just one of those things that it was bound to happen. I think Hawthorn, they came off of playing North Melbourne a couple of weeks ago as well, had a bit of confidence, and it sort of rolled on a little bit. But I don't mind Sam Mitchell. I feel like he's in a bit of a FUBAR position at Hawthorn. But I think he's, to be honest, he's doing an all right job with the list he has as well. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that is a mitigating factor here. So,
no, 100% with you on this one. And the fact that some of his really good players have either started on the injury list or been on the injury list at times. He's gotten Will Day back. I know CJ is still hurt. He's battled injury, and he's one of those guys that you could tell they were really looking at being that runner off halfback, like a lot of teams have kind of started using this year. Is that damaging kick, that damaging speed and kickoff halfback has been something that's been utilized throughout the entire competition, and not having that. So Sam Mitchell is doing, he's for the list that he's got and for the headaches that he's had to deal with this year, I think he's done about as good a job as he possibly can. Is it perfect? Absolutely not. Did we expect a little bit better in his third season? Maybe, but it's also, I mean, you can only do what you can only do. So I'm exactly one of those. he gets a win over, as you said, kind of a team that they've had their tires pumped up, and unfortunately now there's slow leaks in every single one. And I think reality is starting to check back into the St. Kilda camp a little bit on that one. So let's jump to the next one. Marvel Stadium, as we see a little bit of the shocker. I know Essendon has played really, really well, but I mean, if you tuned into the first 4 weeks, I mean, the Giants were being talked about as flag favorite. This nobody can stomp it. Well, this is two in a row, two losses in a row, as Essendon beat the Giants 82-62, a 20-point win. I mean, and I know it. I know it's been the talk of Victoria again. It's one of the only bad parts about the AFL being based in Victoria, is that teams like this get a lot of plaudits at winning another game. Are Essendon back, or is GWS a little bit lower than what many people thought early in the season?
Look, GWS sort of had that lull in the middle of the season last year as well. Let's not forget that. And I think they're good at treating it as a marathon and not a sprint.
Mm-hmm.
A timely reminder to all Dons fans and Port fans as well is that premierships aren't won in May.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, look, they talk about the Essendon edge they didn't edge anymore. It was just a full-blown rager. That's all I'll say about that. Because seriously, Langford and Quelfi, they sort of ripped it up. But look, I don't know. It's hard to read Essendon. You know, Brad Scott at the helm, a lot of people at the start of the season were sort of eviscerating them for how they may or may not play. I've got friends of mine at the Sash Pod who was a part of the Horde podcast network that we're a part of at the Project. They didn't have much faith. And even then, I look at this game and I think to myself, is it a false prophecy? there's a part of me that feels that way, honestly, because it's at a smaller ground, it's at Marvel. Like, to be honest, I'm actually surprised GWS didn't get up for Callan Ward's 300th game. He's a fantastic
Old
player.
cement
Oh yeah, I know.
head.
Yeah, you're not a fan of him. Up the river,
I respect you. I respect you, but GWS, I know some Swans fans are cannot get up or get around GWS. I respect GWS and respect what they've done because they've fought a lot of things, and Cal Ward is one of those. You got to respect his toughness. The guy is tougher than a $2 steak. I'm there's
Yeah.
just there's no other way to say it. Or tough as or as hard as a cat's head is what I've heard too. Is I respect it. I respect the guy. He does it the right way. He's not a dirty player. He gets up and under. He gets the footy. He works his absolute tail off. He may not be the greatest talent wise, but the guy does it, and I respect that. So 300 games for old cement head. I got, like I said, got to tip my cap to him. I agree with you. I was a little disappointed because I know Cal Ward is quite the high in their leadership group. So for them to not kind of step up in that game was a little disappointing. But I mean, have you heard, did you hear the great story of Sam Welfi went to, I think it was a children's hospital, and had a cancer patient paint his nails. And he said, if he kicked a goal,
Oh, okay.
he was going to do a cool
That's
celebration and show the
right.
cameras his
Yeah.
nails. And he did. And it was really cool. And the story's taken on a life. And I love stories like this because it just shows you the humanity of these young men, because
Absolutely.
it's easy to say, hey, you're paid a lot of money, you can be a diva. But for them to take the time to go to children's hospitals and to meet these kids and to do something special for them like that, I thought that was absolutely magnificent. So huge shout out to you, Guelphy. That was awesome for you to do that, and to be able to kick three goals in this game, and to do the celebration showing your fingernail polish to the camera is absolutely magnificent. So good on you on that one. That was absolutely
Agreed.
awesome. So we'll jump to, I'm gonna lump the next three games together because
Please,
I don't
please.
really want to talk about any of them too much in depth. As the Western Bulldogs beat the Richmond Tigers by 91, 133, 42. The Gold Coast Suns beat North Melbourne up in Teo Stadium, up in Darwin, 120, 52 by 68. And Collingwood beat the West Coast Eagles by 66, 103, 37. I mean, the easiest way to say with all three of these games is one team play well, one team not. I mean, I don't really want to go too far in depth on any of these. Richmond, I mean, literally they're being held together with any adhesive they can find. It doesn't help that Morris Rioli goes down in this game. They just cannot stay healthy. I'm gutted for Adam Uzé on this one. North Melbourne, they're an absolute dumpster fire. They're an absolute dumpster fire rolling down a hill, as my wife likes to say, because rolling down the hill makes it worse, which I absolutely love. And then the West Coast Eagles, I mean, Elliot Yeo goes down, and I mean, Harley Reid can only do so much, but Collingwood, despite all their injuries, are just such a well-drilled side. So with all three of these, I mean, the doggies, I still have questions. I don't think this is one of those, the right home to mom win. You beat a bad team. Let's just be honest. Same thing with the Gold
Hang
Coast.
on. Let's talk about that game though. Shout out to the Richmond fans. Seriously, you guys are the most fair weather fans ever. 38,000, and I reckon
At the
a lot
G.
of that, a lot of those people must be seagulls because seriously, that was so empty, and that's just a travesty on a lot of the Richmond fans who just didn't bother to turn up. Like honestly, like 9-13 to 3-2. Yeah. Why the hell would you go like half time? There's plenty of things to do in Melbourne, but seriously, like, what are you doing down there? And the Richmond song, best bloody song in the AFL, but the fact that they weren't able to play it at the end of the game sucks. But yeah, Western Bulldogs still can't get a read on them. Luke Beveridge, probably one of the a very warm seat in the AFL. Let's the Gold
Warm may
Coast
be
North,
understatement. I'm thinking that thing is
yeah,
that thing
toasty,
is a hot that thing
toasty.
is a hot plate
It's griddle.
crack an egg and you're cooking it. I mean,
Yeah.
that's my personal opinion, because say when you've got board members saying that this is a top four list, I
Yes.
mean it is. I just don't see how he is I don't see how he escapes this season as the coach unless they get
No.
to finals.
Donnie. Listen, you could do what Port did last year. Now, listen, this is between me and you. Last year, Ken Hinckley at the start of the year said that it was the best list he's ever coached. Right? They win 13 in a row, whatever the fuck they did, right? We roll them in the showdown. You know what they did? They signed Ken Hinckley anyway. He loses in straight sets in the finals. Fan-fucking-tastic, honestly. It does not matter what the board members say because, seriously, Luke Beveridge, very toasty seat. Now, the Gold Coast North Melbourne game, it's at TIO Stadium. That's a hard travel, honestly, especially if you're not acclimatized to it, to be perfectly honest. I spoke on the Further North podcast with Marnie and Alex, and they do a brilliant job over there. But I ahead of the North Melbourne game a few weeks ago, I actually didn't have a lot of faith in Adelaide because I felt like North Melbourne have a lot of youth. They need to give it time. I feel like I think they think that the bottom has fallen out completely, but they've got some good signs there. And I'm not a fan of just absolutely eviscerating that club compared to be honest, the basket case that is St. Kilda. That is much more of a basket case than Gold Coast. The fact that Gold Coast have an established base in Northern Territory makes me think they may be a part of a future move north, but we'll get to that soon. And the Collingwood West Coast game, honestly, West Coast have come to earth. Okay, they beat Fremantle. You know, they've done a whole bunch of good things. They beat Richmond, but, you know, what does that mean now? But at the same time, they came to earth and giving away so many goals in the second quarter as well. I think Coley just put left lane hammer down, as you guys would say, or right lane hammer down here. So is what it is, mate.
Well, in the one thing I got to say about Collingwood is the fact is that they're dealing with injuries now. This was almost kind of the perfect team to get with all of the injury issues that they've had, because this is a team, no Elliot Yeo, the gutsy, besides Tim Kelly and Harley Reid, it's a very soft underbelly. Some of their best players are on the defensive side. They still don't have Oscar Allen. This was kind of the perfect situation. If I'm Collingwood, I'm a little worried because some of your best players are getting injured in a time when you really need them to start finding a little bit of form. I know there's still tons of time. We're only going into round 10. So there's still so many rounds of footy still left to play, but this can make or break your season. You can't win a premiership in May, but you can damn sure lose it because you can put yourself in such a hole you can't get out of it. So I'm all three of those games. I mean, literally the Doggies looked magnificent again against Richmond. So I'm not going to take a lot out of that. Let's see how they do if they face a top eight side. Gold Coast again. Dema may be the savior, but this season ain't going to make them see finals. I just think this is a team that they're a flat track bully. They're going to beat teams below them. It's teams above them that are going to give them trouble, especially on the road. And again, Collingwood facing a West Coast Eagles team that I think they may have already got the two wins they're going to get this season, but we'll see. Again, still a long year to go. And we'll jump to the last one in Adelaide. And I know as just by your reaction, I mean, I remember sitting down and watching, I was sitting down watching this game going, what's going on? Like I just, both of these teams, if you asked me at the start of the season, both these teams, I was super confident in making the finals this year. I thought Adelaide was coming off a good season. Just they got nipped a couple of times in close games, especially in games where they were playing teams in the top eight sides. I think they acclimatized them well. And then Brisbane, I mean, they're 5 minutes away from being premiers. If they had just a little more time, I think they had a chance to win that one, just ran out of time. Played to a 90-90 draw, as you kind of said, and the groan on this one. I mean, I thought this was a fantastic game. Your thoughts on this, because again, this comes back to the old comment is that when it comes to a draw, how's your approach? Are you happy about it? Because Brisbane seemed really happy to get the 2 points and go home. Where Matty Nix was rather salty. He was not happy that his team shared the points.
Look, personally, I've got no problem with a draw. Okay, I want to get that off the bat. The fact that you can play, and it was Andrew Dillon who said it today as well, the fact that you can play for 120 minutes with so many variables and come to a draw is a lot better than the absolute poo-slinging fest that is soccer, honestly. I'm Italian myself, and I can't stand soccer. You know why? It's boring. 2-2 draw, don't want to see that. Who does? You know, when it's 90 apiece, okay, that makes sense. You know, even in the NFL as well, you're going to play, you know, a total of 60 minutes plus 15 minutes as well. If you get to a tie in the end, is what it is. Obviously not in playoffs, etc. But at the same time, I've got no problem with the result, okay? It's just more the fact that it's a Sunday afternoon. It's the end of the week. I hate Sunday afternoon games. You know why? I've got to wait all bloody weekend for a fucking draw. Do you know how much that sucks? They've got to wait the whole time. And look, one of the closest games in the AFL ever, 3 points, 2 points, 1 point, and then a draw in the end. But I look at the score, like Fogarty finally coming on. He is a beautiful man. I would turn for him in a dime, honestly. And the fact that everything that has happened off field as well. And look, to be honest, I was quite scared about Brisbane coming in because no matter what, they've got the guts of quite a good midfield as well. And I feel like their midfield got on top of us a little bit more. Unfortunately, Josh Worrell's wrist looks like he's out for 8 to 12 weeks. He had an operation today on that as well. And you can listen to the Crowcheck podcast as well, who are currently recording as we speak. In fact, I've got a couple of messages asking me for some equipment updates while they're recording at our Ross Trevor studios. But at the same time, look, you know, Rankin comes on song. You got everything about Soligo coming on. The future's, you know, still looking bright. I'm not a fan of like it's like Chris Scott's comments after Friday night as well. You know, the fact that Nixie isn't happy with the fact that there was a draw. I mean, it was he unhappy because we were so close to a win? Yes, I would prefer a draw than a, you know, 20, 30, 40 point loss because that means that you've done a lot of things right. And there's little things to tweak. You know, compare that to the, you know, shit fest that the last three games that we were talking about just before. There's a lot of things to do. The fact that we kept up with last year's grand finalists and drew, great. Okay. 1 point away from a win. Now, that does mean that, you know, as you said last year, we're so close so often. But at the same time, I think it does show we're close, like, and I'd rather be close than far away. And that's a good place to be, honestly. There were people in rounds like 1 to 6 who were calling for Matthew Nicks to be fired. I hated those calls because personally, it was just completely ignoring a lot of the big issues. The fact that Riley Tuilthorpe is still out and hopefully coming back soon. But, you know, there's a lot of good that's happening, and this was a good example of it, unfortunately, that it ends in a draw, but is what it is. I thought it was a great game. Unfortunately, the commentary sucked. I would highly encourage people, if you can, to find the SEN or 5AA ones. That will probably be on YouTube sometime soon. But hey, I'm not unhappy with how it went, honestly. I'm emotionally numb because, you know, nothing, like I said, nothing worse than waiting all weekend for a bloody draw. But I would rather that than a loss. You know, at least we've got 2 points out of it, is what it is. So.
I'm one of those. I love the draw. The people that are wanting overtime, I detest the overtime because all you're going to do is increase injury because you've got so much fatigue on the body. I don't
Especially
mind.
hamstrings. Hamstrings,
Exactly.
absolutely.
I don't mind you doing it in the finals because you have to have a winner because you can't. The replay is gone. I mean, we're going to be honest. The replay is gone. It is not coming back. There's no. The replay is dead. It's never going to happen again. Do the extra time. Get it over with. Get a winner. I don't like the people are leaning on. Well, we have to have a winner. No, you don't. You don't have to have a winner. It's more intrigue. There's more intrigue. In fact, I think it makes it more interesting to keep the draw because now you have these oddball two pointers where you could see a person get in a final because they got a draw instead of a loss. So for me, I prefer that. I'm 100% with you. There's still a lot of good that's coming out of Adelaide because I still don't think you haven't found what you had last year. Like that's legitimately, you're starting to show signs of it. Darcy, as you said, Darcy Fogarty having a heck of a game. Tex Walker was okay, wasn't great in this game. Isaac Rankin is starting to come up. Jake Soligo has found his niche in the center mids and has looked really, really good. Dawson is again as good as he was here at Sydney. Again, as a Sydney supporter, I will say this. What you're getting is nothing new. It's not shocking to me. We saw it in a ton of moments here. And so the people that are like, what Adelaide saw something that no, every Sydney fan that you ask, if you ask them, we saw all the brilliance that is Jordan Dawson. We would love to have kept him, but he decided he wanted to go home. And I have
Yeah, which
no
is fine.
problem with that at all. Absolutely no problem. I'm happy he's successful. I think he's went into that Crows, he's went into that Crows lineup and has done absolutely magnificently. I do not deter anybody from wanting to be where they want to be. That's the most comfortable. So I have no problem with that. So is it one of those that there's that pain of you love the 4 points, but if the 2 points are the only thing available besides a loss, I'm going to take it all day long. So fantastic there for, like I said, this is a Lions team. And again, I think they're trying to scrape together as many points as they can, considering that they're another one that's being ravaged by injury. So any points that they can get, I think that's the reason why Chris Fagan is so happy, because he got points in a game that if you probably asked him before, he's probably going to say this is going to be a tough test going on the road against Adelaide, who's very good at the Adelaide Oval. They play the Adelaide Oval so well. And so to get 2 points on the road, that's impressive. So I kind of understand why Fagan was happy that he got 2 points out of that. I don't think he wanted to. I don't think he's saying that he's absolutely over the moon. I think 4 points would have been better, but it's one of those where he
any
knows,
coach is going to say that.
He knows getting 2 points on the road at a difficult environment at Adelaide Oval is it's an accomplishment. It is an accomplishment. So
now I just need to say something very quickly. Leighton, one of our co-hosts, is a huge fan of the draw, full stop. Like any game that's very close, he'll
I
be
think
very
he's
happy.
Tipped a few in the podcast before.
I reckon every week it's just like, yep, going for the draw. This week on the pod, I'm not sure if you can see that, but I'll send it through. There's balloons that they've put on the set for tonight as well, purely for the fact that Leighton is on and he is celebrating another happy draw. So Leighton is a cock-a-hoop with the fact
That
that
is funny. That's funny. I can't wait to listen to the podcast myself. I have it set up for the automatic download on my iPod.
Thanks,
I listen to it each week. It is fantastic. Like I said, I may not be a Crows fan, but the banter between you got between whoever is on the show is absolutely hilarious.
Yeah.
I love the three queens of the pod, Elodie, Sophie and Jade, are absolutely hilarious when they come on.
Oh,
I
they're
love
amazing.
I love those three. They're absolutely magnificent. I would love to find a way to get all three of those on my podcast, just to sit down and chat with all of them, because they're absolutely hilarious. Cream's bluntness, I love that about him. Ray's contrariness and how he really thinks everything through his family. Like each one has a different kind of personality, and I absolutely love it. It just works. It just works. I have to say
yeah
that.
I mean, for me, I'm a huge fan of when Cream and Leighton are on, because Leighton is so I call him the pod bitch, because he's so bitchy in some of his replies to Cream, but they just come across as quite nihilistic and sarcastic. It's amazing. But look, to be perfectly honest, it's something that we set up with our Patreons as well, where we do our pre-rolls and what we call Segment Street as well, because look, we're all friends with each other. I think that's the great thing, and part of the magic of what the project is about is that we're all good friends, like off the pod as well. So when we meet up, like it's on a Monday night, but we'll just hit record and just start, and that's it. And you know, we'll do a pre-roll for a good 30-40 minutes, and it's just us either organizing things or just catching up on things that have happened. And you know, Ray will ask, you know, a random question about, you know, how do you order, you know, certain things at the deli without sounding like you're compensating for something, you know, the sort of things that you think to yourself, no shit, I didn't have never thought of that before. You know what I mean? Like little things like, and then Segment Street as well, you know, sort of, you know, when you're a Patreon of ours, like we actually do a fair amount in the background too. We do our obscure crow, get your crow on, all sorts of different things that I love that. And look, Elodie started the obscure crow side of things because of our mutual love of, obscure crow player Nick Gill. So me and Elodie, we worked together, and that's how we became friends, was because we had the same mutual love for Nick Gill. Now I just like the guy. I was just like, oh yeah, he was always maligned, but you know, could have had a shot. Well, she had a bloody shrine to him in her bedroom that
That
when
is
she showed it to,
awesome.
I was just like, holy shit, not that obsessed. Like, and we find the way we interview him a couple of years ago too, which, you know, I think Elodie peaked there. It's all been downhill from there. But honestly, look, they honestly, all of them do a brilliant job. And you know, even though I set it up, I feel like they've kept it going to a point where they just do brilliant work week in, week out. And I love everything that they do. I don't want to get emotional about it, but they just do a fantastic job. So I'm very proud of them.
You can tell that you guys are all friends because there's a healthy, respectful banter between whoever's on the show that it's so very natural. It's so very genuine. And I absolutely love, like I said, it's one of the reasons why I love this show. Like I said, I'm a huge Swan supporter, but I can't not listen to the Crojack. Like legitimately, like it gives me a laugh because you guys are very, very raw. And I get an insider's thought into the Crow's frame of mind. And I try to listen to other podcasts because sometimes you'd be surprised how much fan bases are much more alike than they want to give each other credit for. And I think that's one of the things that I mean, I've got mates on X and on Twitter. I mean, X and Instagram and all that I go back and forth with no matter if it's Fremantle versus Sydney. I have several Fremantle friends. I'll message back and I go, want to have some playful banter. Like it's fun because the way we communicate there's nothing disrespectful. There's nothing. It's fun because you get to have that conversation with somebody that thinks just a little bit differently than you. They support their team, maybe exactly like you do, but for a different team. So it's great to have those connections. So that's one of the reasons, like I said, I love the podcast. It's absolutely magnificent. It is one of my
Thanks,
ones
buddy.
That I listen to it every week. So we'll jump to the burning questions. And we're actually going to throw an extra one in because I know you wanted to have a little bit of fun talking about something. So we'll do a question without notice final one, which I think is going to be hilarious because of the mutual connection that you and I have. So we'll start off with the fun one is that Tasmania is official. We're going to get the Tasmanian Devils. They're the 19th team. But in prototypical fashion, the AFL has to make sure that we're even. So all of a sudden now it is big time that there is a task force up in the Northern Territory, up in Darwin, to get the team there. And I'm hearing it that that's most likely where the AFL would love to have the 20th club. So as a fan of the Adelaide Crows and as a fan of the AFL, your thoughts on this particular 20th team location in the Northern Territory, because I've heard the naysayers. There's not enough population. You have to make the stadium a certain way because it's hotter there. It rains more. Da, da, da. Just your initial thoughts, 20th license, is the NT possible? Or would you prefer it be somewhere? Would you prefer this 20th team be somewhere else?
Okay. So I'm going to stage this out that I don't think there should be a 20th team in the Northern Territory.
Mm-hmm.
That there should be the 19th team will be Tasmania. And I think either St Kilda or North Melbourne or Hawthorn need to move to the Northern Territory. Okay. The reason I say that is because you don't want to dilute things too much, not just from a professional point of view. When we talk about, you know, stadium capacity, to be honest, I think that's irrelevant. I think Darwin during that, in Northern Territory during that time of year is great. Everyone's going to want to travel there, that sort of thing. I think it's going to actually be a really good thing. But do we administrate and do all the off-field stuff correctly with the 18 teams we have now? No. We don't have enough umpires. We don't have enough infrastructure in place, I think, on the back end from the AFL, because I don't get why we're looking to push into a very, very small market when we don't do things internationally properly. I think, to be honest, I've got a lot of relatives and friends in the US, and they talk about the fact that they can't believe how good of a sport the AFL is when they get to see it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
There's a huge market that's there that is not being captured. I look at the NFL, that they're going into Europe, and, you know, there's a huge push there. They're playing games in Germany, UK, that sort of thing. Does that mean that we need an international team? Absolutely not. However, I think that we should actually be pushing more to have more of a spread to push internationally so that we can keep a revenue stream going. I think the AFL, as in the Australian Football League, is in a very dire position at present, because the way that they go from here and the way that they've completely mismanaged The AFL women's too, which is something I'm a huge love of the AFL women's comp. I've got a daughter who basically only recognizes the AFL women's team, which I love. I'm a huge fan of that. But the fact that they progressively just pushed it to the back end and now they're talking about a 20th team and other crap like that. Honestly, I'm not a fan of that. You've got a basket case of a team that can barely win on the field, with St Kilda that have done absolutely nothing since 1966. Like, yeah, they've made grand finals, big deal. But honestly, they haven't done a thing. And the fact that people give crap to Essendon, who haven't won a final since 2004, yet you've got St Kilda that have just gone from scandal to scandal on and off the field. Honestly, that should be the team that should move to the Northern Territory and just rebrand it and just get rid of St Kilda altogether. That's how I feel about it, honestly. I hate the fact that they're wanting to further dilute the competition. I'm just not a fan of that. I agree with Northern Territory having a team, though, but it should not be an expansion franchise.
Okay. And again, everybody's different. I've heard the naysayers say, well, there's not enough talent. I think there's enough. I think there's enough talent. The
Oh
issue
yeah,
is
I'm not disputing the talent whatsoever. I'm
exactly. And I'm
disputing
not, and I'm
the
not saying
infrastructure, the train infrastructure, yeah.
what I'm trying, I think for me, it's more of a situation. Again, I'm looking at it from like a 10,000 foot, like, because I'm 100% with you. I think the AFLW is treated like a second class competition. You can definitely tell. Just, I mean, again, I follow things online. I'm online a lot with friends of mine, and it's just, you, there are still people that look at it and go, well, it's women's footy. It's shit. It's shit. It's not even worth the time of day. Bull. There's tons of super great talent. I keep track of the Sandful. I keep track of the Waffle. I keep track of the VFL. There are young 18-year-olds that are coming up that are going to blow your minds with how talented they are. This competition legitimately is the growth opportunity for the AFL that I don't think they're realizing. It's bigger than what they want to accept. So I'm 100% with you, and I love that young girls are getting that shot to see strong, very athletic women play this game. And until the AFL gets their head out of their asses and starts treating it like the competition that it should, it's going to continue to struggle because of the fact that it's not being given the correct oxygen that it needs. So I'm 100% with you. I'm
And yeah, this is something that I get so pissed off about when we're talking about just the Adelaide Crows, the club itself, and I know a lot of the people that work on the back end there, they do an abso-fucking-lutely amazing job in the welfare of the female players, the welfare of the team itself, and making sure it's adequately funded as well. It's not tokenistic. They've been there since 2017. They've won three premierships. I love that whole part of the club. And if anything, it's something that I'm probably more passionate about than the men's side, because the men's side is always going to be there. They're always going to have the support. They get, 52, 53,000 people at a sellout game. The women's side don't get those same opportunities because of the way the AFL has completely rat fucked the whole league itself. It's something I get so mad about. And it's just, and honestly, the fact that they had a grand final in, some back end stadium in Brisbane to like 5,000, 6,000 people, when the Crows at a local game for the AFL women's at Unley Oval get more people there. Like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, this is just, oh, it just, I get so angry about it because my beautiful daughter is wanting to grow up in that as well. And I think of Ebony Marinoff, of Chelsea Randall, of Erin Phillips, who, moved to Port, and that was always going to happen as well. But, all of those amazing, trailblazers of the female sport for the AFL, to be honest, don't get the support that they need. And we're talking about a 20th team. That's the part that I get pissed off about. Like, that's the part that I just get so mad about, that we're talking about expanding into an area that, and it's not disparaging Northern Territory whatsoever. I get why there could be a market there, but how about we fix what we do now and get it done properly? Like, the fact that we're looking at this now, it just shows how navel gazing the whole Victorian centric side of the AFL is. And to be honest, how, do you mean, I was quite misogynistic the whole AFL can be as well, when it's just completely ignoring the fact that you've got 50% of the population wanting to engage. And I'm not saying the whole population, but you know, they're wanting to, you know, identify with players that represent, you know, their gender if they identify that way. And you know, the fact that it's just ignored and sort of put to the wayside as something that's tokenistic, that's something I get really mad about, because it's not. It's something that I know we're going way off track, but it's something I get really mad about, the fact that the AFL Women's is just not supported more, and we talk about shit like this. It just pisses me
No,
off. So,
I
yeah.
genuinely, legitimately, I say this with as much passion as possible. I genuinely appreciate guys like you, because one of the biggest things that I think is going to change the AFL's mind is fans like yourself, like mine, that are stabled on, we are rusted in, we are supporting the women's game. I've genuinely told many, and like I said, I go back and forth with several Sample W players, with Waffle W players. I tell them all the time, this is something I'm very passionate about. I want to talk about the women's game because I think it deserves more publications than it gets. The women's game does not get what it needs, does not get the
Absolutely.
plaudits that I think it has rightly deserved and earned, not just because they're women, but because these are hellaciously good footballers. And have they gotten everything that they probably deserve? Absolutely not. They have not got the coaching they deserve, because a lot of times they're given secondary rate coaches, or coaches that are using them almost as stepping stones, which is very, very frustrating for me. So I'm 100% with you. I love the passion. I think it's absolutely fantastic. I don't think you're going off topic, because you're saying the reason why you don't like the idea. And I think you're completely on task on this, and I know that there's still some people that are still pushing that instead of having Tasmania be that, it's just kick a St Kilda or North Melbourne down to Tasmania, make it 9 and 9 again. So it's 9 teams outside of Victoria, 9 teams in Victoria. We'll call it a day. But unfortunately, I don't think it's going to happen, because they want to keep the tradition of the clubs. They don't want teams moving, yada 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 yada. Okay,
Oh,
whatever.
fuck the
It's
tradition, Donnie.
I.
Honestly, like,
At the pace it's
I
going, traditions out the fucking door anyway. So I'm not really going to worry about it. So, well, let's touch on this topic really, really quickly. I hate talking about this, because I don't 100% know all the facts, and I don't want to act like I
That's
do.
okay.
Should the AFL stepped in and postponed the game between Fremantle and Sydney due to the fact that you had the tragic passing of Cam McCarthy?
Okay, so I said before that I'd speak from experience and just talk about the passing of Phil Walsh in 2015. He was the Adelaide Crows coach, for people that weren't aware of that at the time. He was, and it's all out in the public now. He was tragically murdered by his son, who was having a mental health crisis at the time. But this was midway through the season, leading up to the Adelaide Geelong game that was happening here, which they then basically cancelled that game. I think it was the only time the AFL game has been like flatly cancelled, not just postponed, cancelled. You know, they had a ceremony at the time, and then the Crows played the next week under, I think it was Scott Camporeale was the interim coach. And it was at West Coast and Subiaco, and you can see players like crying their eyes out at the end of the game, and West Coast won by 100-odd points. I can't remember what it was. I couldn't watch that game myself. I was so just like numb, emotionally numb. Now, I think, yeah, neither of us are in the situation, but just to put it in summary, I think if the players felt like they didn't want to play, I think they would have said something. I felt like they may have done it in honor of him. And I mean, to be perfectly honest, looking at the scoreline, like they had a fair amount of scoring shots too, so I don't think they were out of the game. Like, as weird as that sounds, like I'm not speaking on their behalf emotionally, but it's hard to put to know what their headspace was, because Cam was a part of that team as well, but not sort of the focal leader, you know what I mean? Like, I can't. I honestly, I don't think it would have helped to postpone it. It would have delayed the inevitable. In fact, if anything, the emotional shock may have set in more. There's a lot of logistical things that have to be accounted for. The fact that it's the team that's the most furthest away as well, has to travel to from Sydney to Perth flights aren't cheap. So you know, sort of delaying a whole team, and I'm going to assume, you know, half a 737, is bloody hard to do. So, to be perfectly honest, no, I don't agree. Not just from a logistical point of view, but to be honest, from an emotional point of view, because they came out and said, "Oh, Fremantle wanted to postpone the game," and Sydney said, "No, we want to play. We're here." What do you do then?
Yeah, no,
So
I completely here's my thing. And again, I think this thing gained a little bit of traction on online. And again, and I am I'm gonna say this, and again, I don't want Fremantle fans to get angry with me. I'm not saying this to harp on it. I think a lot of Fremantle fans made it as it, like, here's my reply to it. If Fremantle wins this game, there's nothing said about it. Like, there are a lot of fans, they're not saying a single damn word about it. But because Fremantle lost, I think it started to gain a little bit of fuel. I honestly, if I remember correctly, there's actually only two people that played with him that were on this roster, and I believe that's Alex Pierce and Nat Fyfe. That was it. So, like, I get that those are two really good players, but I don't think either had a super horrible game. I think Pierce played a really good game. He's been one of the best fullbacks in the entire competition this year. Nat Fyfe, was he a little off? Yes. I mean, you don't get caught holding the ball three times, many times as Nat Fyfe very often. So I can kind of maybe see that. But I'm with you. Like, if you do postpone it, there's only one option really that you can move it to, because Saturday's slate was already bonkers. The only way you're going to move it is you're going to move it back to Mother's Day. And I don't
Yeah,
think they
exactly.
wanted to do that. So I think it was kind of, they were also in a little bit of a rock and a hard place, because you can't move it to Saturday because Saturday had so many games already, because the slate was already basically full. There was no way you were going to get a TV coverage. You're no way you're going to get TV coverage there. They didn't want to move. They probably couldn't have moved it to Sunday because purely the fact it was Mother's Day, and you'd have to have the entire TV crew come back again. Sydney was already there. And I also agree with you. I think the Fremantle players wanted to play it because it's better to get the game over with. So then you can grieve fully off the path, because you're going to have
Absolutely.
between Friday and their next game to be able to go through the grieving process, probably attend the funeral and everything like that. So again, my thoughts and prayers to the McCarthy family, my thoughts and prayers to the Fremantle supporters, and anybody that had the chance to meet Cam. Again, everything that I'm hearing, wonderful human being. Just one of those that, unfortunately, with just a tragic ending to a life way too early. But again, I hate saying it, but it does come off like Fremantle fans were trying to find an excuse for why their team couldn't kick straight, besides the fact that Sydney's pressure was really high, and the pressure I think got to them a little bit, because a majority of those players did not play with Cam McCarthy. So I'm not under I'm again. I don't want to disrespect Fremantle. I'm not saying that that's the only reason, but it did kind of seem like after Fremantle, after the game was over, the excuse was, well, the reason that they lost was because they were. I'm not 100% sure on that. And again, I'm not accusing anybody. Again, it's a legitimate argument. Like I said, if they would have postponed the game to Sunday, I would have completely understood. I would have had absolutely no problem with that. But I'm also over here in Iowa. I'm not in Perth, and I don't have control over the AFL. I'm not going, you play here. No, I don't have that kind of power. So again, it's frustrating. Again, I don't want to do anything disrespectful to the
No,
deceased.
that's fine.
That is nothing that I want to do, but it kind of comes off like, it seems like it, and it looks to be almost like an excuse. And I hate saying that, but that's the way it felt by the responses I was getting. Is they should have canceled this. They should have canceled or postponed this game. Well, if they cancel
I
it,
think
when are they going to replay it?
it's up to the players. It's up to their own welfare. If they chose to play, so be it. Like, ultimately, that's their decision.
Yeah. Or then it was never an option. So it wasn't given to you. It probably was. They just didn't want to address it because nobody wanted to push the pain further, is how I
Correct.
see it. So,
Yep,
all right,
absolutely.
we will do this, since I always like doing this question, the burning questions, when I get a fan of a team. I love asking a question about it. And again, I'm meeting this, I'm asking this just because I think a lot of people in the media and a lot of people even in Adelaide were really expecting this Crows team to be finals contenders, being up there, maybe even pushing to potentially push for a flag. So for you, Peter, the Crows have not had the season that many were expecting. And again, I'm not saying this to jab the knife. That's not me.
No, thank
Are
you.
you disappointed in the season so far?
I mean, look, I don't think anyone was expecting sort of the way we played from round 2 to 5, honestly. Look, personally, I'm not disappointed. I almost think to myself, did we overachieve even last year as well? Like, I don't think any of us were sort of expecting to play finals last year. And the fact that we got so close, was that sort of a bit of a fallacy in itself? Maybe looking back, like it's revisionist history. And I think having those close games as well, we've got the underpinnings of everything that's there. Is it something that we need to recruit more, or do we just need to, build up from within? I'm not disappointed, isn't the right word. I think it's more just underwhelmed, if anything. I think disappointed is, I think that's something to reserve for the end of the season. But I feel like I'm just a little bit, especially after the Bombers game as well, it's very apathetic. And I think that's the worst feeling you can have as a fan, when you're apathetic versus the actual, disappointment. Disappointment is, we're expecting to be way up here, and I don't think we're expecting to be way, way up here. I know in our prediction podcast, we all predicted us to play in finals, though, but I don't think any of us could have predicted, Riley Tilthorpe, being injured, and now Worrall's out as well. I don't think any of us predicted that our scoring would go from first to 18th. I don't think that would happen, but we're getting back. And that was something, sort of keeping the faith. And to be honest, I have a huge amount of faith in one man off the field, another Burgess, not Chris Burgess, Darren Burgess. If you look at the way that he's able to coach and condition players, even Melbourne in 2021, it was a progressive thing. It wasn't a you're on and you go from there. It's a slow burn. It's a thing. And I think the one thing I'll give credit to with the Crows, even from that most recent game, was a four quarter effort. I can't ask for much more. There were so many years where we'd have two or three quarter efforts, that sort of thing. The fact that we're now able to give a full four quarter effort is a big thing. Could we end the year sort of not dissimilar to last year? I hope not like the last, second to last bloody game, but I hope, in all honesty, that I think we still got a chance to make finals. Absolutely. So underwhelmed at present, but I still think there's a lot of opportunities coming, mate. So I'm not necessarily disappointed, like I said, underwhelmed. So yeah.
Nah, it's I completely get that. And again, you never know. Again, every year's a crapshoot when it comes to how results turn out and everything like that. So, but again, I think you're starting to find it. Again, the Worrall injury concerns me a little bit because the back line has been playing really, really well, despite its a bunch of, I would almost say is outside of Adelaide. Many of your back six could pop up in somebody's Wheaties and nobody'd know who the hell they are. So
Oh, same with us. Yeah, we know.
and there's
Look.
nothing and there's nothing wrong with that because sometimes it's not having a superstar back there. It makes you a little bit it makes it easier for teams to underestimate how good your back line is. And it's, I think they've played really, really well despite being something that most people would say is was supposed to be your weakness going into the season on that one. So we'll jump to. I want to have a little bit of fun because you brought something up off mic, and I thought it'd be a little bit fun is that you're a huge college sports fan. We were chatting a little bit of college sports before we hopped on the mic here, so I got to talk about this. How interesting as a college sports fan is it the difference between Aussie broadcast and American broadcast? Because I know over here, the FCC will absolutely light you up if you drop a
FCC.
four-letter word, even if it's I that was the one that you were asking what it was, and that's it. The
I couldn't
FCC,
remember the
yeah,
acronym FCC.
it's
That's
fine. Yep, I've said it numerous times. I love Aussie broadcasts because you drop a four-letter word, and you're not getting the finger wag and being fired. The old 2006. BT dropping on Triple M, dropping the F bomb after Boyd kicked it, after Boyd kicks a goal. I
Yes.
love it. There are times I prefer the Aussie broadcast so much more because there's not this sterile, conservative type of approach to it. Like they say how they feel and they're not afraid to ruffle feathers doing it. So as an Aussie, you listen to American sports, you listen to Australian sports. I mean, compare the two because, like I said, for me, it's Aussies. Night and day, easily, because they are absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, look, just for everyone's knowledge, my wife's from Arkansas, so my brother-in-law Jeff has converted me to be a massive Arkansas Razorback fan. I could say genuinely a fan across all the sports as well. I I think he converted me because misery likes company, honestly, because there's been some times because, holy crap, seriously, the football team. I mean, we've got Bobby Petrino back with that desperate, so anything can happen. But anyway, honestly, I think the problem is the commentary side of things is one factor of it. I look at the whole production side of things of AFL, and like I said, with Leighton doing a lot of his, audio, sorry, video archiving. I'm a huge audiophile as well. I collect a lot of radio broadcasts of AFL games, that sort of thing. I think radio is one of the most pure formats, just pure audio, because it tells a, it's able to tell and read a story, that sort of thing. 5AA, Sam Tuggle is a huge fan and friend of the podcast as well, and he's a fantastic caller, models himself on Bruce Abernathy, that sort of thing. But I have a huge love of American production as well, because the one thing that I feel like American sports production does that Australian production doesn't do anymore is it captures you into feeling like this is it. Like you can't, what you don't, you touch your remote, you will be smacked. You are going to be in the, you're going to be entertained the shit out of you for the next 4 hours. You're going to watch ads and everything else like that. The Fox Footy broadcasts are very, I'm not gonna lie, there's not a lot of effort that's put into them, unfortunately. They've got some good analysis, other than fucking Dwayne Russell, but even Channel 7 as well. The fact that they don't broadcast all of their games in high definition in 2024, it's like this is just farcical. And I think it shows a lot of the fact that a lot of these broadcast partners can't make enough money off of it. But how much of that is not advertising the product well? Like, I look at the way the NFL, and I know we said we're only going to talk about college, but I look at the way the NFL is packaged by CBS, Fox, NBC, Amazon as well, and ESPN. They all package it because it's a package. It's something that needs to be advertised on behalf of the league. Whereas I don't think that's done by the broadcast partners. And I do think that the next broadcast still is going to be very bloody interesting, because I would not be surprised. In fact, I said it for the last broadcast still, that either Amazon or Netflix, I think, will be a huge player in it. ESPN was sniffing around for the rights back in 2001, but that got nixed by the federal government, unbelievably, because they didn't want it exclusively on cable, despite the fact, the US does it, but it helps to fund the production side of things. And that's where, I look back at, Channel 7 broadcasts of, like, even though it was a Crows grand final, the 97 grand final itself, they had three separate commentators, which, think about that, sharing the rotation. Like, imagine like three Vern Lundquists, like, doing the, and, like five Gary Danielsons. It sounds like a fucking cluster, doesn't it? And some people hate Gary Danielson on this, on, SEC, or now Big Ten on CBS. But at the same time, you think about, there's a lot of production that goes into the back end of it, and it's not done well. We can talk about the AFL women's production side of things, that even on their BNF night that they had, that they still haven't named the medal itself. They got all the logos incorrect. So Port Adelaide, I think, was Hawthorn, that sort of thing. It's just
I remember that.
stupidity. And things like that, I just think, look, the back end, that's why I really admire the slickness of, I'm a huge, like, I look back on some of the SEC on CBS broadcast from like the early mid 2010s, and you just, if you sit there and think to yourself, how many cameras do they have? Like, the money that's poured into those broadcasts, it's just slick from start to finish. We did a Patreon thing, or I recorded a Patreon thing, where I talk about, this is going to sound so stupid, but the 2010 Arkansas versus LSU game was a battle for the boot end of the year, and the winner was going to go to the Sugar Bowl. The actual broadcast itself is at War Memorial Stadium. There's only 50,000 people there, but it's the most raucous like crowd ever. And you think to yourself, like, War Memorial Stadium in Little Rock is a shitty stadium. It's like they don't even have running water there at the moment. That's not a joke. So you think to yourself, they poured all that money into that broadcast itself to really jazz it up to the fact that you don't notice all the bad parts, and it tells a story from start to finish. Even though Arkansas won, like, it tells a great story. That's not something that's done well anymore by Australian broadcasts. And I think it's something that if they do that right, they could really package it to international providers as well. And I honestly, I really hope they do that sooner rather than later, and they get rid of Channel 7 doing the broadcast too, because they've just lost the plot something fierce.
Yeah,
So
it's.
I honestly, I could go on and on with this, and I bloody won't, because what's the time here? 10 past 10 is shit. So you know what I mean? Like,
Well,
it's go on to.
I'm literally looking at my clock on. I gotta start work here in a little bit. So, but
No,
it's
oh
fine.
crap. Sorry.
It's absolutely fine. Like
We can do it another time, man. Trust me,
I
honestly.
enjoy great conversation. I enjoy people that are passionate about it. Absolutely. I absolutely love it. I'm 100% with you. It's the one thing that I think the one thing that hurts when it comes to the AFL going into the American market for me personally is it's just the time frame. Like I anybody that watches my X feed knows that I have to wake up for Swans game sometimes as early as 3 in the morning. And I'm willing to do that. I have absolutely no problem to do with it. A mate of mine who's from Australia ruined it for me. I won't go through the story again. I can tell it and I tell it enough. That he gave me a huge spoiler because of the app that I have, I can watch on tape delay. And he spoiled it for me one time back in 2017. And ever since then, I have not missed a game live. I have not missed a game live of the Swans since then. I only missed one women's game because I had to sleep in because it started at 4 and I had to start work at 6 and I wasn't and I didn't have enough time to wake up at that particular time. But I've only watched one Swans game, men or women, tape delayed. Only one. So
Wow.
it's a point of pride on that one. Like this last week against Fremantle, I was up at 5:30 in the morning and then had to figure out how to at 3 quarter time, I was able to go to work and be able to get to work just in time to catch the fourth quarter. So I didn't miss anything as well.
You know, I used to do that with Razorback football games in 2014, 15, and getting up at 2 or 4 a.m. It's a hard slog, especially when your internet ain't working properly and you've got issues with connecting to watch ESPN in the US. So hats off to you, mate. I know what that's like. It's
Well,
bloody hard.
the one thing is I've had several Australians that say that they're huge NFL fans or NBA fans and they go through the same thing. And it's just, so it's the fun of going back and forth, but normally it's not the other way around. It's not Americans watching the AFL, but we've surprisingly got a growing number of Americans that love the sport and we're trying as
Absolutely.
much as we can, but it is one of those, it takes a special degree of dedication to be an AFL fan and to watch it live. I mean, because every single game I can watch on tape, every single game I can watch on delay or on demand later. I spend my Saturday mornings or my Sunday mornings watching the games that I miss, like anything after about 2 a.m. I'm usually watching the next day because I need sleep. So I'll wake up at 10 or 11 and I'll wake up
Sleep's
nine
overrated, man.
and
You don't need
exactly,
that when
especially
you're
in the
playing.
footy season. And I'll sit there and either watch the highlights or I'll watch through a game. Like if a game I think is going to be super competitive, I'll sit down, I'll turn it on, work on a couple of things and listen to it, watch it a little bit. So it's one of those people are, do you watch every single game? I probably don't watch every single minute, but I will keep track and know how each game has resulted and kind of how they played out. So it's always fun. So, all right, we will jump to it. I am running short on time. I want to be sure that I can make it into
It's
work
all good,
perfectly
man.
fine, but I have plenty of time. So we'll go to the part where I take over the podcast just the littlest bit. We'll do my team of the week and my power ranking super quick before we get to tips. So we'll jump to the team of the round, starting in defense. Since I'm a coach, we always have to start on the defensive side, starting with full on the fullback line. Sees Fremantle's Brandon Walker, St. Kilda's Cal Wilkie, and GWS's Harry Perryman. And the halfback line sees Ollie Florent of the Sydney Swans, Essendon's Mason Redmond, and Brisbane's Dane Zorko. We talk about our wings. We give love to the wings on this podcast. Winger from Fremantle, Jeremy Sharp, and the Western Bulldogs, James Harms, take out the wing positions. Through the guts in the center, we see at the ruck position, Max Gawn of the Melbourne Demons, Sydney Swans, Chad Warner, the Western Bulldogs, Marcus Bontempelli, and Collingwood's Nick Dacos go through the guts of the center. Through the half forward line, we see Melbourne's Christian Petrarca, Brisbane's Callum Achi, and the Western Bulldogs, Aaron Naughton. And the full forward line sees Willie Rioli of the Port Adelaide Power, Essendon's Kyle Langford, and Adelaide's Darcy Fogarty. We jump to the bench where we see Joel. Where I was one. I
We did it.
intentionally
We
made sure to
did
put
it.
him last. Geelong's Zach Guthrie on the defensive side. My ruck backup is Mark Pitnett of the Carlton Blues. My midfielder is Gold Coast Sam Closte, and the forward is the Western Bulldogs Sam Darcy. So really quickly, I know it's a lot of names. Really quickly, I did get a Crows fan in there. Darcy Fogarty kicks four in this one, so I gotta get him into the team of the week. Thoughts really quickly on team of the week.
Well, I'm a big fan of it. I heard the Darcy Fogarty part. That was fantastic.
Sophie's gonna love me, huh?
God, he's a beautiful man, can I just say. You can buy the fog off top at our Big Cartel page, project.bigcartel.com. That's Sophie designed as well. And we have, I said to Soap, you can have him first. He's all yours. Because trust me, he's a man brute. So love him to bits. And a
But yeah.
genuinely nice person too. So.
So as soon as you started celebrating in the back of my head, I'm like, well, Sophie's gonna love this team of the week, because I got the one that she loves so much. Love Sophie to death. She's absolutely fantastic. All right, we'll jump to the power rankings, which again, this is gonna throw people off because I do the last five games. I do what have you done for me lately when it comes to power rankings? So you're gonna hear a couple of names that are a little shocking for some people. Starting off, number five, the Hawthorne Hawks. Have three wins in the last five games. Can't say many teams have that. Number four, the Adelaide Crows at number four.
Oh, yeah.
Number three, the Essendon Bombers. At two, the Collingwood Magpies. And at number one, the only team that's won five out of five in the last five games, the Sydney Swans. So power rankings are always interesting.
No bias there.
Hey, they're the only team that's went 5-0 in the last five games. So it's hard. I can't cheat that one on that one. So. All righty. We jump to my favorite part. Again, we're early in the week. The injury lists haven't even come out yet, but we got a tip. So really quickly, we go through it. Thursday night footy. I believe this is the last one for a while. I think there's a few because of the bye rounds. They take Thursday night off. We go to a TIO Stadium up in Darwin where the Suns play well. Suns, Cats. No Jeremy Cameron. Can the Suns pull the upset, or can the Cats find a way to knock off the Suns up at the top end?
I'm going to say this is going to be Gold Coast by 20 plus, purely because Geelong's going to be coming off a 6-day break as well, acclimatizing to everything in Darwin. I'm going to assume that Gold Coast are staying up there as well as they did last year too. This is going to be Gold Coast are going to win.
I'm going to go the other way, only because I think the depth overall of Geelong is going to be able to neutralize it. I'm interested to see how Jared Witts handles whoever he's going to face, whether it's Stanley, whether it's the youngster. I just think the experience of the Cats will be able to handle it. I think this is one of those Hawkins might have a field day. Despite not having Jeremy Cameron, I think the Cats just too good an outfit altogether. I'm with you. I really could see. I this is one of those. This is a very close game. I think this is a great Thursday night game, especially up at the top end. It'll be interesting. But Cats, a scrappy side. I think they'll be able to win this. But I'm with you. The Suns is a good tip. I'm not gonna argue with you too much on that one. Friday night footy sees an absolute belter as the Carlton Blues have to go up to the SCG to face the Sydney Swans. Normally, again, I tell many people I tip with my heart and my head many, many a times. I have already been informed that unfortunately Tommy McCartan will not play in this game, and that concerns me. That concerns me a lot, not because of how tall Carlton is. It's because it's another structural piece. It means most likely Aaron Francis is going to stay in, and Aaron Francis is already starting to get Sam Reed type of treatment in many of the Swans pages. He's the bane of their existence. He drops two marks and oh my God, he's the worst player. He's the worst player ever. I'm going to tip Carlton in this one only because I think their two bigs are going to give the Swans headaches. If the Swans can hold possession, I think they have a chance to win this one, but I'm going to do my prototypical. I'm going to tip against them, knowing that if Carlton win, I get the tip right. If I get it wrong, my team wins. So I'm going to pull a fast one. I'm going to tip Carlton in this one, hoping that I can reverse my tip. But I've been pretty good tipping the Swans this year. I tipped them over Fremantle, and a lot of people had free out over that one. So
bloody hell, Donnie, you're talking yourself off the ledge, man. Well, just pick one.
I'll tip Carlton in this one. I think their height is going to be a problem.
Oh, you know what? Just to fuck you up, I'm going to pick a draw. I'm kidding. This is going to be a poo slinger, I reckon. This is going to be very low scoring, only because I feel like Carlton are going to try to mash in and Sydney with a small ground as well. But I'm going to pick Sydney by going to be by two.
All
It's going to be very
righty.
close.
Melbourne at the MCG. Your beloved Crows travel over to the G to face Collingwood. I think this is a great time for you to get the pies. I know sometimes Crows don't travel well. I'm going to tip the Crows in this one. I think too many injuries. I think you could start getting some dominance with Laird and Rankin and Soligo through the middle. I think this is the perfect time to get the pies. I'm going to tip the Crows in this one.
I've got no faith in us. I think it's going to be pies by two. And the only reason I say that is because there's going to be some dodgy ass decision last year. We played there very well last year. And to be perfectly honest, there's going to be a big contingent of Crows fans going over this one. From memory, I think this is our second game that's playing at the MCG as well. There's a lot driving over, but please drive safe. But I reckon Collingwood, just only because it is at the MCG. But I would not be surprised whatsoever if the Crows get up.
Interesting one up in Sydney at New at up in Giant Stadium as the Giants take on the Western Bulldogs in this one. I'll tip the Giants in this one, but
Oh, absolutely. Me too.
I'm not super confident in either of this one because the
No, I'm
Giants.
confident. I'm confident. The GWS will absolutely smack Bulldogs. They're going to have a little bit of confidence in bloody Luke Beveridge is going to be pumping his bloody triceps something fierce, but it's all going to go to crap. I reckon. Don't be surprised if Beveridge may not be there after this game.
I'll have to see. It'll be very interesting. I'm a tip GBS, but I'm not super confident either because GWS's form has kind of dipped down a little bit. And the doggies can on their day put up a big score. And unfortunately, they've been a little bit suspect going back, which is really interesting. I'm with you, tip GWS. Fun one at Marvel Stadium as we see St. Kilda take on Fremantle. I'm not going to try the indigenous names for the indigenous round this year because I
Of course,
do
it's
not want to
Indigenous
butcher them.
round. Yeah.
Yep,
No,
which
that's fine. No, fair enough.
I'm
Quite
loving the
respectful.
Guernsey.
That's all good. No.
St. Kilda hosting Fremantle.
No, this is the poo slinger, mate. Fuck. Fremantle by seven.
I'm tipping Fremantle. Defensively sound. They've got the heights to take out King, and I think that really throws off their forward line.
I
I'm
think
going to tip
Donnie as
Fremantle in this
well.
one.
Yeah, I think you mentioned about the emotional sort of rebound as well. I feel like this would be the game where the rebound does happen. I mean, not to sort of say anything bad about Cam McCarthy's death or anything else like that. Rest in peace, man. But honestly, emotional rebound from that Sydney game as
I
well.
could see that too. All right, up at the Gabbas, Brisbane host Richmond. I mean, Brisbane win this one. I mean, this is the injury cup, but I think Brisbane's got the better superstars on the pat on the pitch. I got Brisbane.
Agreed. I've got another reason to say it. They're
Essendon,
coming off a
North
big
Melbourne.
draw.
Do we give North any chance?
This a Sunday afternoon. This has got, bloody Kelly Underwood and Dwayne Russell written all over it. But I'm going to say the Bombers. But don't be surprised if North Melbourne sort of come out with a bit of bravado. They did that the last time they played there too. So anyway.
It's when North is looked down even further is when they come up with something special. When they come up with something special, I think
Exactly.
Essendon win it, but I think North puts a little bit of a scare into Essendon coming into halftime. And then I think
I
after the
agree.
half, Essendon's power and their abilities should run through. So, fun one for you is Port Adelaide host Hawthorn at the Adelaide Oval. Are you gonna stick it to the Port Adelaide faithful, or are you gonna tip?
I need a run up for this one, but honestly, I would not be surprised whatsoever if Port squeak this one out. I'm tipping Port for this, just to be clear, but I would not be surprised whatsoever if it's way closer or if Hawthorn really smack him in the nose, because of that sort of lull from last week. In fact, I could see Port going on a bit of a rip of a few games and then, shit in the bed in finals again, because that's what they do. But at the same time, honestly, it would not surprise me if, I'm tipping Port, but don't be surprised if Hawks get very close. Whatever the margin is, take Hawthorn.
I'm the same. Port Adelaide win this, but I think Hawthorn could give him a scare, especially because you always sometimes you have a letdown when you get a big win like that, and it's so emotional. Sometimes you can have a letdown in the next game, and Hawthorn could be the absolute worst possible opponent in that situation. Port, I think, win it, but I think it's a squeaker. I think it's one of those that there'll be a few
Absolutely.
very tight bungholes in Port Adelaide colors, unfortunately, if things go how they could. And last but not least, another fun one as the West Coast Eagles host the Melbourne Demons. I have the D's in this one. I think D's big.
I wouldn't say D's big. I'd
Unless they get
say
Elliot Yeo back, there's no way that midfield can stand up to Oliver Petrarca. And then I have a and Gaughan is in ripping form right now. Bailey J. Williams, as much as he tries as hard as he best can, this is an absolute ugly net matchup. With an older defense, Jeremy McGovern is probably not going to be back since he had to go to hospital after that last game. Barras is not going to be able to hold up. This could be a barrage if Petrarca is finding his form the way it is. I think this could get ugly quickly.
Donnie, I don't like you. All these facts and everything else like that. What the fuck is this? Like, okay, that makes sense. But there's a part of me that just thinks to myself, Melbourne, maybe shit the bed. Who knows? But I'm not saying they're going to lose. I think Melbourne will win comfortably. But don't be so, look, West Coast, they can be sneaky at times. And I think, Harley Reid might go back home and read the Western Australian back pages a few times and see, hey, I'm not on there. So, it might be a boil over. Who knows? But Melbourne,
Yeah,
absolutely.
should be interesting. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is going to do it for the podcast. All nine games tipped. A fun conversation, Pete. This has been magnificent. I've loved being able to catch up with you. Like I said, the Crowjack Project is one of my favorite podcasts. I love listening to it. Stay awesome, my friend. It is
You
magnificent.
too,
And the
buddy.
good thing is that I've got several more Crowjack members to hop on the podcast. I know. I think I have Ben next week. I have Jade in a few. I
Yeah.
have Jade in a few weeks. I have Jade in a few weeks, and I haven't heard him on the podcast. Is Josh going to make his debut sometime soon?
Not too sure about that one. Josh is sort of taking a bit of a hiatus for himself, so he's focusing on some of his own content stuff as well. But look, Josh is a huge, huge fan of the Crows as well, so there's a lot happening too. But yeah, there's a plethora of hosts to go through as well and to talk all things too. I reckon if you want a very chaotic podcast, get Cream on because he'll be talking to you God knows when and God knows how. He might be pouring beers at the time. Who knows? But
Well,
he's an
if you
enigma.
have his social, send him my way. I'd love to sit down and have it. I'd love to sit
Absolutely.
down and have a chat. And I've said it a few times. If you guys ever want to learn, if you want the Crowjack podcast to learn about the USAFL, please reach out. Let me know. I'd love to sit
Hell
down
yeah.
and talk to you about the wonders of footy over here in the States.
Definitely. No, happy to do it. And we'll definitely chat very, very soon, my man. But
All
you
righty
guys,
then.
you do an amazing job too. So keep it up, mate.
Well, I appreciate that very, very much. So, ladies and gentlemen, that is going to do it for another episode of Donnie's Disposals. Keep an eye out. More footy coverage still to come. It's been great talking to you. We'll be back again very, very soon.